Hey, everybody, it's Greg Gutfeld. This is The One. My next guest is the hardest working man in Hollywood. This guy, if you go to his IMDb page, he's got like 230 acting credits, and he's my age, early 30s, of course. This guy has been in everything. You have seen him. He was in like The Love Boat in 1986, but he was, you know, a regular in Lost, a regular in Matlock. He's been in Rob Zombie movies. He's in Man in the High Castle. He was great in 6 Feet Under as a sex addict. One of my favorite performances because, oh, it was scary. And then he was in Bubba Hotep. He was also in Nash Bridges. I want to talk to Dan Roebuck about his new movie, Getting Grace. But first, I want to talk about Dan Roebuck in general. Dan, how are you?
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm great. I'm beyond great. When people talk about me in introductions, I think, am I dead? Did that happen?
Yes.
Is this the eulogy? And maybe this is how you hear it.
Well, the thing is, with you, because you've been in like, I don't know, 300 movies already, it sounds like a eulogy. You could probably stop working and you'd be fine. But I want to ask you a couple of questions about this because
– Yes, sir.
Is it because – I have a theory. Because you're such a prolific character actor that you are well-liked by the people you work with. Because you can't afford to be unlikable. Because character actors, you got to work with people, and if you piss them off, they'll find another one. So I'm wondering, are you just well liked?
Well, thank you. I hope I'm well liked. Here's what I know: I'm always prepared. Mm. And when you're going into a show, I do a lot of shows as a guest star.
Right.
And when you're the guest star, it's like you're already coming in behind the curve, and everyone already has decided you're an idiot before you even
yes.
knock on the makeup trailer door.
Mm-hmm.
And they think the star of the show is the funniest person, and you're an idiot. So every time I go to work, I got to be like, I'm not an idiot. I'm not an idiot. I just did this thing for Rob Zombie, and I was getting just a little pushback. Everything worked out from the department's hair, mm-hmm. makeup, or wardrobe. I won't say which one. And I had to say, I know it looks like I'm a day player, but I'm really a movie star doing a favor for my friend who's doing a favor for me. So can we just cut through the chase and just get to, we got to make me look like I looked in the other movie, and it doesn't need to be discussed. I'm saying it, so it's so.
So are you?
I'm sorry.
No, go
ahead. I spent a lot of time trying to ingratiate myself in a positive manner, but I'm also a positive person.
You know, I'm a huge fan of White Zombie, which later became when Rob Zombie left White Zombie, and now it's just Rob Zombie. Do you guys hang out? Are you guys friends?
I don't know if he would be horrified if I said that. Our idea of a good time would be to sit down and watch, you know, to watch Frankenstein, The Bride of Frankenstein. That would be our idea of a good time. So we don't get to. He's as busy as you are.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's got an empire to run. So when we do see each other, it is really old home week. And we do spend – I never – by the way, this is, I think, the other reason I'm always asked back is if they're done with me, I don't hang around. Like, I don't get in the way. And there's nothing worse than when you're done by 9 o'clock in the morning and you're still there at lunch. That means that you're literally waiting 5 hours for a free meal, and I try not to be that guy. But Rob said, hey, are you waiting for lunch? And I was done so early I had to – sit around and you know, to get in grace work until lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good guy, by the way, a hell of an entertainer, and he's not the guy. I mean, that is the thing for all of us, isn't it? People confuse who we are on TV with who we
right.
are.
Yeah.
And you're in a different position because you are who you are.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But that's why people want to hang out with you, because they know you're going to say something totally funny and irreverent, generally at their expense.
Yes. You know, I had Rob on Red Eye, and you're right, very, very down to earth, very sensible person. And you mentioned something that you guys would like. Your idea of fun is to watch a horror movie. You and I are roughly the same age. I think you might be a year older than me. I grew up, I was a fanatic about horror movies. And like, if you were a kid in the 70s, you had, I think you had like three previous eras to work with. In the 30s and the 40s, you had the Boris Karloff, right. Bela Lugosi, black and whites. And then the 50s, you had these great American drive-in B-movies, and like The Tingler, and you had Vincent Price. And also you had the Japanese, yeah. You had the Japanese monster movies, Rodan, Mothra. And then the 60s, you got the Hammer films, you know, with Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee. It was like, I bet you and I, at any given time in the early 70s, me in San Mateo and you in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, were sitting in front of a TV watching Creature Features and watching...
Yeah, watching the exact same show.
Yes.
And that's the funny thing about this phase of this part, not phase of my life, but the part of my life that's a celebration of old movies. And I'm, by the way, I'm not an actor because when I was a child, I'm not Kenneth Branagh. I like Kenneth Branagh, but I'm not Kenneth Branagh. And as much as I like Kenneth Branagh, because I'm not Kenneth Branagh, I would have made a better Frankenstein than he did, because he made the Shakespearean Victorian Frankenstein, and nobody ever watched it again. I would have been like, let's make the good Gothicar. But we had, you're right, we had all of that, and we had all of those great actors
right. To
pull from. Mm-hmm. We had Vincent Price and Boris Karloff, and I mean, Vincent Price, I met him in person when I was about 15. Uh-huh. He was touring in a play called Diversions and Delights. He played Oscar Wilde.
Mm.
And I mean, he couldn't have been nicer.
Yeah.
And by the way, he was like 9 feet tall. He was 6'5". So when you're 13, that seems giantish.
Well, you know, everything that you mention launches another thought in my head. You said you would play a better Frankenstein monster or Dr. Frankenstein.
I would have directed a better movie of Frankenstein. I would not have directed a better Henry V.
Yeah.
I just would have directed a better Frankenstein. I would not have directed a better Thor.
Yeah.
I just would have directed a better Frankenstein. That's all I'm saying.
I think you would have been a great monster because you were a monster in River's Edge, one of the greatest movies in my top ten favorite movies. Dan played a teenage killer who kills his girlfriend and then shows her body off to his friends in high school. And this is based on a true story, I think, from Sacramento, California. Where I was growing up, I knew the story pretty well. And then I did promotions for The River's Edge, for an ad agency. And it's such a great movie. And you played – this is a – I'm leading to a question. You played a fantastic, nihilistic, psychotic character, but you never – you weren't typecast again. You didn't – that didn't become your wheelhouse. Why was that?
No, I – you know, I don't know if it was just out of attrition of – There wasn't that character in the next movie, but I always, you know, I mentor actors, and I'm writing a book for actors called The Audition is the Job and Other Truths That I Learned in the Land of Make-Believe,
mm-hmm.
because actors get a lot of misinformation, primarily from books by failed actors.
Right.
So what a great idea to be the actor who actually makes a living.
Yes.
To say, look, it's not that hard. This is how to make a living. And it really comes down to be a gracious person. That goes back to what you were asking in the first place. What was your point?
I don't know. See, oftentimes I forget my point too.
Yeah, but oh, we're talking about nihilism. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, no, good for us.
Yeah.
Two 50-plus-year-old guys. Together we remembered the point. The point is, how did I not get typecast as that?
Yeah.
You know, before River's Edge, I did a movie called Cave Girl. After River's Edge, I did Dudes, and then I did Disorganized Crime. And in each movie, I went from a teenage nerd to a teenage killer to a early 20s punk rocker to a 35-year-old cop. I started one movie after another, and I was always the same guy. My hair was just different.
Yeah.
And I glued on a mustache, literally glued on a mustache, because that age I couldn't really grow a mustache, right?
Yeah.
So I glued on a mustache, and I looked older. And I think that's honestly, Greg, growing up watching the Boris Karloffs and the Vincent Prices,
mm-hmm.
and seeing that they were always different.
Right.
I mean, if you really watch Vincent Price, it wasn't just the horror movies. You'd see Vincent Price in Victoria Regina. I mean, you see the guy in movies that weren't not necessarily horror movies, where he was just doing great character work.
Well, let me ask
you. And back then, the character could be the lead in the movie. not just the character guy on the side.
Yeah, God, Vincent Price was my childhood. You know what I want to ask you, because I look at the amount of credits and the fact that you float. You can float through any TV show. There's hundreds of them. And then you're also a movie star. I mean, you're in The Fugitive. You're in a lot of big movies. Who would be your corollary actor in the 1970s? I made a list of people, and I think I came up, but I don't think I got you down. But is there an actor that is the Dan Roebuck of the 70s? The person that
now,
you saw?
Go ahead. Yeah, the person I wanted to be, but he wasn't a movie star, was William Wyndham.
Oh my God!
That's the guy.
Oh, what a great actor! Was he in? He was in everything. Everything.
He was in everything we ever watched. And there's other actors, by the way, Don Rickles, Frank Gorshin, Harvey Korman.
Yes.
You know, the actor, the guy who actually, you know how I became an actor? Before I became an actor, I just knew I was going to be an entertainer. And then I went to see Give 'Em Hell, Harry, which was James Whitmore, one-man show.
Truman.
It was a movie.
Yeah.
They filmed the play and put it out as a movie in movie theaters. I walked into the movie theater, the Boyd Theater in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. I walked in the theater thinking I was going to be an entertainer. I literally walked out saying, that's what I'm going to do.
Wow.
So Whitmore is another amazing example of, like, you know, he's a working class actor, could play presidents and could play farmers, could play soldiers or spies, could literally play any character he was called upon to play.
I went through
it. So amazing.
I went through your choice. William Wyndham was a great choice. I made a list of, like, I said Emmett Walsh. Then I thought of Simon Oakland, but that's not fair because you're better looking than Simon Oakland. And then I thought Dick Van Patten was in everything from Westworld, one of the great movies. But
yes,
you're not Dick Van Patten either. Then I was thinking, do you remember John MacGyver?
MacGyver, of course.
I was thinking of all these people that go, none of them actually fit, but William Wyndham is an excellent choice. I was going to say Bruce Dern, but Bruce Dern wasn't likable. He was always so
Bruce. Yeah, and when he was working in TV, like he and Charles Grodin, the guys who became movie stars were usually playing villains.
Right.
Bruce Dern wasn't generally. William Wyndham was literally the guy. I would say the character that I've developed the most is that guy who's an affable person in an extraordinary situation.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've played villains, and you know, like William Wyndham, one, you know, he's punching Captain Kirk one week,
yes,
and he's petting Lassie the next.
Yes.
You know, or he's doing the Twilight Zone or the Night Gallery or, you know, any of that stuff. So the good news for me primarily is that I never set my sights on being some Oscar-winning movie star. Mm-hmm. In the first place, I grew up too poor and too humbleized by my surroundings, that I would have never had that kind of infatuation with anything other than the work,
because
and I know Sam Mateo's, they're working class. You got to work.
Yeah,
and now, you gotta be a worker.
You know, it's great too. It's like you also worked with somebody who was a fantastic villain, but nobody knows it. Like you worked, you know, obviously you were on Matlock with a legend, Andy Griffith, but he was in a great movie called Prayer for the Wildcats. Did you ever see that?
Dude. No, come on. Marjo Gortner,
yes.
Say it with me.
Marjo Gortner.
Gortner, Andy Griffith, William Shatner,
yes,
and the Brady Bunch dad, Robert Lee.
Yes, what a class! What a great movie! Oh my God,
dude! When they start to come on hippie dance, come on hippie dance.
Yes,
that's my impression of, you know, and Robert Reed, who you know,
yeah,
later we, you know, yeah, he's all they're all playing tough bikers.
Right.
Marjo Gortner. Who would cast Marjo Gortner as a tough guy?
And you know what? I can't find anything on Marjo. Remember, he was in Earthquake. He played that. He was like trying to rape Victoria Principal and then gets killed by, I can't remember who kills him. Charlton Heston, maybe? No, I don't remember. Anyway, he's got, like, I've Googled.
He's killed by the event. Doesn't something fall on him? He killed his roommate who say negative. They make fun of his sexual proclivities.
Right.
He shoots them. And then I think when he's going to get Victoria Principal, I think some other event happens that takes him out.
Oh, my God. You know, that Prayer for the Wildcats was such a great... That was back in the era of made-for-TV movies, and you could get something Bad Ronald, you know, something that just sticks with you forever. Do you remember the Bad Ronald movie? The kid who lives inside the walls?
Yes. Wait, who was that? Was that like
it was a kid, Scott something, but he always played like disturbed teenagers. I feel like his first Scott with an R. I can't think of his name. Somebody look up Bad Ronald. I'm yelling at my producers. But Scott's I don't know. But anyway, that movie stuck. His mother dies, so he decides to live inside the walls of the house.
Right, of the house, and the other family moves in.
Yes, exactly. In that, but there were movies like that. Remember Trilogy of Terror with Black?
Karen Black?
Yeah.
Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
Yes.
Yes. Darby being pulled down the stairs by those little potato-headed people.
Yes.
Like, and the one I remember, it's so funny, two events. What a weird world how your brain works. So the night I try to be a good Catholic boy. I say I try. I've never set myself up as holier than anybody. But I remember the
Scott
night
Jacoby.
Of my first
Scott Jacoby.
Scott Jacoby.
There you go. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, the night of my first confession.
Right.
Because that's one of the seven sacraments. Mm-hmm. The night of my first confession was the night there was a TV movie where some lady was buried alive.
Uh-huh.
One of those like Dan Curtis Saturday Night at the Movies.
Right.
And I was a nervous wreck. I was like, can we get this over with? I just was like, I went in there. I confessed to World War II. I was like, yes, that was me. I did it. I did everything. Like, I confessed to Watergate, anything, just to get out of there quick. I just wanted to get home to the Saturday Night Mystery Movie, I think is what it was called.
It was,
and the lady was buried under, and she was alive and trying to get out before she died.
What a time for great movies. I got to ask you about the movie that you directed. Did you also write, because you talk about growing up in Bethlehem, you actually made this movie in your hometown. It's called Getting Grace, and it's out right now. Can you walk the viewers through what it's about? I watched it. It's just chock full of gallows humor. I mean, it's a comedy about death.
It's a comedy about death because it's really a movie about living life to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so that's where the comedy comes from. So the movie's about a teenage girl who is dying. She goes into a funeral home to find out what's going to happen
mm-hmm.
after she dies.
Right.
But she ends up teaching the funeral director how to celebrate life, how to live every day of your life to the fullest possibility that God gave you to live mm-hmm. it. So people think, how could it be, how can you make a comedy about cancer? But anybody who's suffered through this horrible disease
mm-hmm.
knows that there's some things that are so ridiculous. If you don't laugh,
yeah.
you would just go and blow your head off.
Yeah.
But you're trying to be a person who's strong for other people. You're trying to, you're trying to be brave. You're trying to be courageous. And that's what the character Grace is, played by Madeline Dundon, an amazing young actress that I discovered in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to say, she's a local. So you actually cast locals. And in places that
I hung
out.
Nuts.
Because viewers don't know this, but I lived 10 years in the Lehigh Valley working for Rodale Men's Health and Prevention, about roughly around maybe you must have already left for L.A., I would assume, then.
No, I think when I read your one of your books, I pegged us. I think we overlapped by a year or two
mm-hmm.
While we were there. It would have been so much fun to have been able to meet there and go to Beers Around the World. Lentz's Beers Around the World.
Yes.
By the way, They wrote an article about me once in the newspaper, Wunderkid, 19-year-old director creates, and the guy at Lentz's almost shot me. He was like, you've been drinking here, get the hell out of here. I'm going to lose my license, you idiot. So,
they were I saw amazing fights in Lentz's, and it was always among the employees. The guy behind the grill. Oh my God. Such a strange bar.
So Mike Hughes, I even remember the guy's name. Mike Hughes was one of the great cooks there.
Yes.
I'm sure he would never have fought with anybody. He was a good guy. And he's not the guy who threw me out. The owner threw me out. But with all, you look back, it's whenever someone says, like my next movie, this movie, The Hail Mary's about nuns, and people will say, oh, I remember the nuns hitting me. And the very first thing I say is, what did you do?
Yeah.
Because they think like these nuns are some kind of like samurai that are just waiting at, waiting to smack someone. I've never seen anybody hit anyone who didn't deserve it,
yeah.
And that's a fact. You think of every barroom brawl that you've witnessed, it always began with some idiot going, oh, F, whatever they say, they're asking to be smacked.
You are definitely from the Lehigh Valley. Hey, I want to ask you, is there anybody, I know this is a question actors will never answer, that you couldn't stand working with? I know you're not going to answer that.
Yeah, that's so fun. Let me just think if there's anyone who's dead that I could throw under a bus.
Go ahead.
The truth is, honestly, dude, you know who I always have trouble acting with is people who have been given the gift of success prematurely.
Mm.
And that's from, I say prematurely, obviously they got it when the time was right for them to get it. But you would be surprised at how many times I've gone onto a set and some kid who's never been in anything is telling the DP, the director of photography, where to put the camera. Well, you put the camera over there and then I'll start. They all think they know everything. Everything.
That's great.
And I'm always astounded. And the fact is that not one, I'm right 1,000% of the time, not one of those actors or actresses are ever around 5 years later, because it goes back to, rule number one in my own book is, be gracious.
Yeah.
So if you're not gracious, who the hell wants to work with you?
Yeah.
They'll tolerate abnormal behavior from people with extraordinary talent. But if you're just another good-looking kid or girl, there's another good-looking kid waiting right in your wing.
Yeah. I have to ask you this question because I have about five more minutes, I'd say, at the most. Who's crazier, Crispin Glover or Dennis Hopper? You worked with both of them in the same movie.
Yeah. No, Dennis Hopper. Now, both are artists.
Right.
I don't want to say anything inflammatory. I'm actually so entertained by Crispin Glover, and I am really madly in love with the fact that he doesn't really give a crap about what anybody thinks. I wish I could be that, but I'm a father and I'm in a community and I'm a responsible. I can't say silly stuff just to make people stare at me. But the Dennis Hopper I got was not the Dennis Hopper from the last movie.
Right.
I got a sober.
Yeah.
Drug-free Dennis Hopper, who, by the end of his life, by the way, I'm sure you're well aware, had more in common with you.
Yes, he was a big Fox News fan.
He loved Fox. He said, I have to go. He told me, and I know he said it on, he said, I've got to go watch Fox News in the, in the studio because my wife doesn't like it on.
He was in one of my all-time favorite movies, Blue Velvet, Frank Booth. Was an incredible
Mommy!
Creation. Yes.
I don't know what you're allowed to say, but if anybody ever says, do you want a beer? Do you want me to open it? There's only one answer to, do you want me to open it? No, I want you to. He is absolutely amazing. And here's what astounds me, Greg. I went to where they showed River's Edge in Portland last year. My friend Dennis Dredd put it on. And I went and I was just doing a little calculating before I got there. I realized that when we made River's Edge, they said it was like the Rebel Without a Cause of the 80s.
Right.
And I realized that the time between Rebel Without a Cause and today is the same time between, River's Edge and today is the same time between Rebel Without a Cause and River's Edge.
Jesus.
32 years. The other thing I realized is I am older now than Dennis Hopper was.
Oh, man.
When he did the movie. And I thought he was an ancient being of genius oldness.
Yes.
And he was like only 53.
Wow. We lost him too young then. He was, because he died like,
he
must have been in his 60s then, I guess, late 60s.
He was in his early 70s.
Early 70s.
Yeah.
Amazing guy. Somebody I would have loved to have met, and I wish but anyway. I want to give you one last plug for Getting Grace. Where can people see it?
Well, if they go to GettingGraceTheMovie.com, they'll see where it's playing. We're opening in Arkansas this week, Salt Lake City next week. We're still in some theaters around the country, and we're just excited that the movie in this rollout, people are really loving it. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, people just love the movie, mm-hmm. and that's for a guy who co-wrote it and made it.
Yeah.
That's a blessing beyond blessings. You want to when you do art that people like. It's
yeah.
a real treat.
And you're such a
different. Thank you for having me.
You got it, buddy. And you're such a different. You're such a different type of artist from the generic Hollywood actor. I mean, this is kind of a daring movie. It might be called religious, and it's just you know, I just like that you're doing your thing, and I can't. You're going to be on my show again soon.
Yeah, I'm coming back in May. I love being on your show, and I got to tell you, I just love the breath of fresh air that you are. I have to walk more of a tightrope,
mm-hmm.
obviously, but I do that anyway, just in life, because I'm
yeah.
always trying to figure out what can make people work together. But I love the opportunity to meet smart people. Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, I know.
My God, I can't. I'm like addicted to my port. I don't. X-Hamster's going to go out of business. I haven't looked for years. Jordan Peterson is astounding.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything he says is amazing.
Yeah.
So thank you for letting me meet him.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? And how far are you along in his book? Have you? It's a challenge.
I'm in chapter 3. It's a challenge because you can't. It's hard to read books by people 50 times smarter than you. I've got to. They should put the IQ on the cover so I, you know, you could tell. Like if you're going to get through it, but I'm rereading a lot.
You'll like my new book because my book is closer. We're both in the same IQ boat. So my new book, which is it'll come out in a couple
what's
of months. It's a collection of all my monologues.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love you. I have Joy of Hate right next to the bed.
Excellent, buddy. I will see you soon. Talk soon. Give me a call whenever
right.
you want. I'm always around.
God bless you all and all your listeners. Thank you. Thank you. And go see Getting Grace.
You got
Bye-bye.
It, buddy.